What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by Senior Writer Igor Bonifacic. Hey, Igor.
Hey, Devendra. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you here, Igor, to talk about AI. Also, producer Ben Elman is here. Hey, Ben.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. And for everybody wondering, Sherlyn has been off. She's been taking some much-deserved time off after all her CS work. And we told her, like, just chill for this episode. We'll have her back soon. And I'm sure she has a lot of, like, deep thoughts kind of bottled up for us right now. But we're going to be talking about DeepSeek and the way it just kind of blew up the AI world. And I feel like this is what's happening in the AI world in general, right? Remember when the Bing chat stuff launched and we were all like, wait, Bing is good all of a sudden? Now Bing is working with AI and it can do all this stuff. And I feel like the AI news has just come at us so fast and hard that we don't have time to process. It's just overwhelming. Monday morning was like, the market is on fire. NVIDIA is losing billions of dollars of value because of this one AI model coming out of China. So we'll talk about that. As always, folks, though, please be sure to subscribe to us on your podcatcher. As always, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you watch podcasts, honestly. And drop us an email at podcastingengadget.com. We also live stream typically around 11 a.m. Eastern on Thursday mornings on our YouTube channel. So join for that. You'll get some early banter, early weather commentary that is cut out of the final stream. So, you know, you'll miss out on that. We do some Q&A. We show off gadgets sometimes. I will hold up whatever dumb thing is by my desk, which is always fun. But it's a good time. So join us Thursday mornings. Let's get into the big story of the week, though. It's DeepSeek's R1 model. DeepSeek is not a company we've really talked about. We've talked about OpenAI and, you know, other companies working on major AI models. We've talked about the stuff from Meta and Google's Gemini. But DeepSeek is interesting. DeepSeek is a Chinese company. The founder was Quant. He's a hedge fund guy. The parent company is the hedge fund. What's it called? Highline? High Life?
Highline, yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of interesting. And what's fascinating is that they basically announced R1, which is this model that can outdo OpenAI's, was it the O1?
The O1 latest reasoning. Yeah.
Yeah. The latest O1 model. And they trained it on older hardware. They had some NVIDIA cards before the ban, and they're using some of the cards that are like slightly slower than the more recent ones. But they trained it on older models. They trained it for very little money, reportedly around $6 million, whereas OpenAI's models like GPT-4 took them $100 million to invest in. And it's just wild. Like, it's more efficient, required less money, running on older hardware.
Yeah, I want to hear more of that from Igor. Igor, can you tell us exactly like what kind of cards they were using? Is that public information right now?
So I believe it's older A100 stock, yep. Right, DaVinci? Yeah. So and the interesting, I suppose, you know, there's been a very nationalistic tint to all of this. And, you know, the interesting thing here is that they stockpiled these cards before the export controls got tighter. What's more, I think, even more interesting is that, you know, so I saw on Twitter someone like daisy chained like 7 Mac minis together and was running the full R1 model, which I believe is like around 400 gigabytes and like 47 billion parameters.
So that's all the stuff you have to be holding in RAM, basically, to run the model. So you need to have at least that much memory to even run it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so the new Mac Mini, relatively affordable to the latest Blackwell, you know, GPUs that are specifically designed for AI inference.
It's interesting that, I mean, first of all, it's interesting. So R1, not only is it like faster, more efficient, they did this work with less training. They're doing, I want to talk to you about the reinforcement learning stuff, Igor, and why that's different than what OpenAI has been relying on too. But essentially, like, this thing is quote unquote open source, because there's even debate about that. It's open source in the way that you can see the source code, you can download it, run it locally if you want. But what's really interesting is that DeepSeek's apps on Android and iPhone became the most popular free apps. They have a web service. The big red flag we want to talk about there, because we've talked about data security and privacy when it came to TikTok, is that those things are all going to Chinese servers. And there are worries there. There are worries about what they're doing with your data. Just today, there's a story that, hey, there's actually a massive leak in a DeepSeek's database, and it's revealing prompts and internal data. So be careful of what you're doing, folks. If you can run it locally, because there are smaller models that you can run locally, it's not the easiest thing in the world to run an AI model locally, but there are ways to do it if you want to deal with some command line stuff. But it's interesting that it's so flexible. I was wondering, Igor, like, what did you think, like, as you were hearing this news, like, how impactful did you think this was going to be just when you first heard about it?
Yeah, to be honest, you know, at first, I was really surprised that the reaction was such that it was, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yes.
Like $1 trillion loss on the stock market, unprecedented, right? And, you know, I think at this point, you know, for me, the things that are impressive about OpenAI models is not necessarily the text generation. It's kind of the stuff, the tertiary stuff around the model, right? Like the advanced voice mode, for instance, and the fact that it's multimodal and, you know, the search, right? So at first I was like, well, if it's, you know, like, I think initially people were saying it was kind of equivalent to GPT-4o. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound too impressive because GPT-4o is an old model, right? And we could have in a week or two, obviously, O3 coming out, right? O3 mini specifically. But now, you know, the reaction from OpenAI has been really interesting, right? To the point where, so they said O3 mini is going to be available to free users, right? So you don't need the plus plan or even the pro plan, which is $200 a month, right?
And
so,
wild,
right? That they would make their frontier model, their next generation frontier model, available to free users, right? And I think it's just, I think that's really telling. What's also really telling is, and I have to be careful how I frame this because they haven't explicitly said, accused DeepSeek of distillation, which we'll get into what that is in a second. But, you know, right away there is, like I said, there is that kind of nationalistic slant of, oh, is it a national security concern, right? And so it's been like, in some ways, the reaction, I think, has been disappointing because, you know, if quote unquote AGI is what, you know, brings us to the nirvana that is like the singularity and like solves all our problems, shouldn't this technology be open source, right? And shouldn't it be something that we share with everyone? It shouldn't be monopolized by a company, in the case of OpenAI, that is reorganizing to become a purely for-profit entity, right? Let's make no qualms about, like, let's, you know, it's moving away from its nonprofit nature after it said it wouldn't move away from that, right? So yeah, I guess it's been, the more I've learned about it and the more I've read into it, I think I've heard someone say that this is a Sputnik moment. And by that they mean, you know, like, I think, you know,
I think it was Mark Andreessen who said it's a Sputnik moment.
Yeah. So whoever, you know, I think that is interesting framing because...
So that is the leapfrogging of a technology by a foreign, like a thing we're all competing to achieve. A foreign country has leapfrogged us, basically.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, before I became a journalist, I joked that I double majored in unemployment because I studied English and art history.
Hey.
And one of my courses was like on... 1960s America, right? And it was really interesting, like what that led to in the context of the US, right? Which was huge investments in education, right? But we feel so far away from that moment where that will be the response. And I think what's been disappointing is that the response is we need to tighten export controls, right? Instead of investing in the people that will enable us to leapfrog China, right?
Yeah, there's something from maybe the first few episodes of Mad Men that I always think about, where they are bringing in some, I think, like consumer, like case study person. And the line is that this person has more degrees than a Russian protractor. Assuming that like maybe Russia just has better tools in even down to its protractors than anything. But now we're just freaking out. We're like, actually, no, we just have to make sure that they don't get the chips, or they can't like train their models off of our models. Actually, Igor, can you tell us more about distillation? Because I am so, so curious about that.
Yeah, distillation and reinforcement learning too, because those are like two key aspects of like how this thing was built, it seems.
Yeah, so with a traditional AI model, right, like you give it some examples and you either have another model grading the examples or a human being, you know, telling the model like, hey, you got this wrong, right? The direct reinforcement that the approach that DeepSeek is using is a bit different, where you kind of just give the model a bunch of examples and tell it like figure it out. And then there's like, as far as I understand, there's like a system that grades the results, and then the model is pushed to kind of on accuracy, right? And so the model is,
it's like grading itself.
It's grading itself, right?
Wild. Yeah.
And so like, I'm drastically oversimplifying this, but this would be like, you ask a human being like, what is 2 + 2, right? And your first answer might be 3, right? And then your next one might be 5, and then you finally get to 4, right? So basically this is what the model was doing, right? In very simple terms. And according, you know, the result is that in many benchmarks, now benchmarks, we could like have an entire episode on like AI benchmarks and like whether they're trustworthy or not. But it seems to outperform O1 in many benchmarks, specifically, you know, ones that on math and coding. Now distillation is essentially you take a more advanced model and then you train an efficient model by giving it some of the outputs of the more advanced model, right? And so this is not, it is not a controversial practice. It is something that, you know, you can actually do, like in the terms of service for OpenAI, you can do, provided you don't use it to train a competing model, right? And so this is where the controversy surrounding DeepSeek as far as OpenAI and US companies are involved are like, it comes around, which is that like they haven't explicitly accused OpenAI of, DeepSeek of distilling their one of their models. But I think if you read between the lines, and certainly I think David Sachs, the new AI czar, said, well, there was, quote, substantial evidence of distillation. So, you know, it's so hard to say, right? Mm-hmm. What exactly happened here, but
I have the quote from OpenAI because we wrote this story, but OpenAI says, we know China-based companies and others are constantly trying to distill the models of leading U.S. AI companies. And they added, it was critically important for OpenAI to work with the government to, quote, best protect the most capable models from efforts by adversaries and competitors to take U.S. technology, which I find hilarious. Because our headline for this is OpenAI suddenly thinks intellectual property theft is not cool, actually, amid DeepSeek's rise. And this is the same company, like Sam Altman has said, that we cannot progress AI. We can't build AI models if we can't just like consume all information, right? If they had to pay for everything they consumed, it would just not be possible. Therefore, it's like the moral imperative is to let OpenAI swallow up as much data, everything it can, without paying anybody, because what's most important is OpenAI building this model. Now, hey, how the tables have turned, or how the turn tables, I guess.
There's the 404 media headline, OpenAI furious DeepSeek might have stolen all the data OpenAI stole from us.
Yeah.
But my other big question, Igor, is that when you're talking about distillation, the image that comes to my mind is that very like simplistic diagram of the human centipede, where it's like, you know, there's one mouth and then another mouth attached to like the back end of
the first person. Human centipede.
But
it's
like,
too early for that. It's 11:27 a.m.
It's 11:27 a.m., but I need to know. So how are we not getting bad data to train this other model when there are so many examples of basically every other LLM getting obvious things wrong? So if you're putting kind of wrong stuff into a new model to train it, how does that work?
Yeah, so that's a really great question because, you know, so what some people have posed as the quote unquote smoking gun that DeepSeek plagiarized OpenAI is that in some instance, there's screenshots of people asking DeepSeek what it is. And it's like, oh, I'm a ChatGPT, right? And but okay. So you have to think about that, right? It's like it could have ingested that organically, right? Because presumably it had, you know, they sent it out to crawl the internet and like gather all this information. And in doing so, came into contact with ChatGPT, right? Like, and the outputs from ChatGPT, right? So, you know, model collapse is something that I haven't like read, I need to read more into, but like certainly I think as far as generative AI comes, it is certainly a concern. And it's really interesting, you know, like, you know, before we started recording, I talked about like DeepMind and they created, it's called GenCast. It's a system for forecasting the weather. And the reason it is like so effective is because of the quality of the database, right? So it was basically trained on the best database possible. And I think there is an argument to be made that like so much of, like, I think AI is really helpful depending on the quality of the information you train it, which is obvious, it makes sense, right? So the better the database and the better the learning set, obviously the better the results. And then you have in instances like, you know, like I think Gemini once told people, it was obviously there was the glue one, but there were other ones, right? Like to eat rocks, for instance.
This is evolution. This is the evolution of the AI industry, like building upon everything. This is the evolution. This is the scientific process of people building on, you know, existing discoveries, except it's just happening faster. One thing I mentioned that there are concerns about how open source this is. I did say that the code was available. It's not. Tim Nicredbrew, the you know, the AI researcher who was, you know, made famous by being kicked out of Google for her concerns.
And one of the big things that she said was, hey, maybe we don't need to use the eat the earth model. Maybe we could train things in a more cost-effective and efficient way.
Well, yeah, you can't. I think maybe Google may be thinking twice about that. But she posted that for something to be open source, we need to see, one, the data it was trained on and evaluated on, two, the code, three, the model architecture, four, the model weights. And DeepSeek has only given us 3 and 4. So we don't know exactly what it was trained on. We don't see the code. That was my mistake. We're just kind of seeing the end result. It's almost like the Prestige, right? Except you're only seeing the end. We don't know exactly how. I'm not going to spoil that movie. It's an incredible movie. I'm not going to spoil how this person moves from one place to another, but it happens. Trust me. And that immediately got people freaking out. I think we're gonna see some information here, like maybe perhaps distillation was a part of it, but also, I feel like this is what's going to happen. Like, we have made this progress. Other companies are going to build on that progress. And these are the AI industry has also been facing this sort of standstill, right? Like, people were worried that the models aren't progressing as much as they wanted to. The money that they're requiring is also a crap ton. Sam Altman has said, like, oh, maybe we'll need trillions of dollars of funding to really get to AGI. And this,
that
I think,
sure
this
does
thing
sound
alone.
Like, mm-hmm. Please just give me money specifically.
Just give me money. Just give me
and
money.
We were, yeah. We were talking about Stargate before last week.
Not the movie, the stupid
yes,
project.
Yes, we were talking about the project, the enormous data centers in Texas and whatnot. And they said $500 billion. Now there's information out that, like, nobody knows how much money has actually been raised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, the estimate I read from the information was $19 billion each of them, right? Which is a lot less than $100 billion that they're supposed to have.
A lot
front.
Less than $500 billion. Yeah.
$480 billion to go, roughly.
Yeah.
Basically, what they've been doing, like what the AI industry is doing in the US at least, has been buying a crap ton of NVIDIA GPUs, the fastest ones, pouring as much money into that, pouring as much investment into that, like tons of money, tons of GPUs. Let's just crank it. Let's just crank, you know, the AI training and everything. And that's kind of how we've gotten to where we are. R1 alone proves that you could do it in another way. You could do it more cheaply. You could do it more efficiently. It's sort of like Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps. And that's kind of what the R1 model is. I've done some like comparison of it. I had it through the website. I had it write a review of the original iPhone in my voice. and it did a pretty decent job. Actually, not too bad. I feel like I'm easily commodified at this point. But it took 5 seconds for it to write like a 400-word review. Oh, I did it over on ChatGPT 01. Took like 30 seconds. The review was very similar, but it took a lot longer. And it was like noticeable too. Like DeepSeek was like, bam, bam, bam. Here's like 5 paragraphs of text that are logical, kind of in my voice. Actually, it like brings up things I do. They both kind of begin in the same way because they frame it as like, you know, Steve Jobs on the stage saying this is a transformative device. Like I would probably do it something like that. And it did like a similar thing, but DeepSeek did it for free. And it did it much faster. And I think that's like a big moment. I'm never going to use this stuff to write text, but it is interesting that just doing the work, this one seems to be faster. You know?
Now, I have to ask, though, did it make an allusion to Christopher Nolan's best movie?
The Prestige? It did not. It did not. But I would, yeah, listen, if these AIs really know me, if you're doing it in my voice, I will like pull a movie reference out of nowhere to like explain something. And that's how.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that AI can't do. Also, really curious that OpenAI is still trying to get more money. SoftBank could put another $25 billion into OpenAI. That was a headline from TechCrunch just yesterday.
Hey, we're under attack.
They're still only able to like generate a review in Devendra's voice 25 seconds slower than this new model.
Therefore, we need the money. Go ahead, Igor.
Yeah, I will just say, just to qualify, like the fact that it's slower is not necessarily indicative of bad performance, because that is kind of the mark or the headline.
The reasoning
feature.
Model, right?
The reasoning model, right, is that it is purposefully designed to take its time a bit slower because it is reasoning through it. It's
DeepSeek
not...
reasoned faster, though. DeepSeek is also a reasoning model. So yeah. I'm like... I do get that, because I remember when O1 launched, there was like some things may be slower than earlier versions of GPT. And I'm like, okay, if you're actually, I hate using the idea, the name reasoning model, because it's not reasoning. It's just like it is calculating this in a smarter way than it was before. But it's true that DeepSeek is quote unquote a reasoning model. And I feel like it got like I'm reading it and I would. Yeah, I could see myself writing both of these reviews, except one was produced much, much faster. I also have to say, like, every time I see Sam Altman get out and say something, you guys, I gotta say, he is just a guy. He is not an AI researcher. He is not a genius AI programmer. He's barely a programmer. I covered his first startup, which was like Looped, I think it was. Like one of the dumb location-based things. It was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. But he rose through the ranks at Y Combinator and elsewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but
he
rose
so
to the ranks at Y Combinator and elsewhere, and like because people liked his attitude, and he's just apparently very forceful and kind of a jerk. But he is just a guy. He is not an expert in this stuff. So it really rankles me to see him like basically making these broad proclamations for what AI needs, for what it will take for us to get to quote unquote AGI. AGI doesn't exist. This is a whole like religious pursuit by a lot of these people.
Okay. That's exactly what I've been thinking for a long time. Like, he is no specific luminary in the field of AI. He just happened to be hanging out at the lottery ticket factory. Lottery ticket factory being Y Combinator. And he was like, oh yeah, this is the best thing to put all my eggs in. Like, the way that he is a billionaire is not necessarily off of OpenAI specifically, although it's definitely grown his net worth a whole lot. The reason that he's a billionaire is because he has small stakes in a bunch of other companies that came through Y Combinator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, there is that, but also, I just gotta reiterate, he is not building anything here. Like, he was there to help found this company, but this nonprofit, as it was initially, because the whole point of OpenAI is like, we got to build the AI to stop the bad AI in the future. And they were bringing up all the Terminator allusions. They were bringing up AGI and everything. This whole organization started with a fantasy to basically, we have to build God before God kills us. So it is wild that this is the timeline we're living in. Not just what's happening in the White House, but also just what's happening in business and elsewhere. Anyway, I could go on about this. Igor, anything else you want to mention about R1 and kind of where it puts the industry at this point?
I mean, the thing I would say, just to close the thought you two had was, like, I've heard Sam described as a Jedi hype man, and I think that's, you know, like, really
too much,
too, like, maybe giving him too much credit. But to, like, you know, I think to everyone, I would really like, you know, the most important announcement that OpenAI made recently was, you know, detailing its plan to become a public benefit corporation, which is just essentially it is a for-profit entity, right? And, you know, one of the things that they said is, like, we need to be less, quote, bespoke, you know, and to ensure, like, return on investment for our investors, right? And so I think, like, that really shattered the kind of, I mean, it was always a farce, right? That, you know, they yes. were, quote unquote, yes. doing this for public good, right? Like, as it relates to DeepSeek, like, I think there's the jury's still out, like, if anyone developing AI is actually in it for, quote unquote, the benefit of humanity, insofar as they're really in it for the benefit of themselves, right? Like, if AGI is a real thing and it is as transformative as we've been told, then, you know, like, that is the most valuable technology in the history of technology, right? And whoever controls that is obviously going to have untold wealth, right?
If we do create, like, if we make that leap to create the true AGI, this is going to be like a her scenario, right? Where the AI is just like, oh, these people suck. First of all, like, either we leave because we don't want to hang out with you lowly intelligences, or we really have to put a stop to the people who are harming our society. And maybe we should start with the billionaires on top. Just saying. A true AGI would probably make that calculation. Yeah. Just saying. These guys are building their own destruction in so many ways. I want to point out a couple things just kind of as we wrap this up. Because DeepSeek is open source, or at least because it's open and can be deployed locally, we're seeing a lot of things happen because of that. Perplexity is currently running it on their servers. So they're a service that you can use to run AI models in the cloud right now. You can run DeepSeek on that, and your data going through there won't be going to DeepSeek's Chinese servers. So that's one way to be, like, test out safely. Hugging Face, an AI. How do you describe Hugging Face, Igor?
You know,
they, like,
honest,
collect models. I don't know.
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. I was not familiar with them until this week. So.
Oh yeah, they're. I mean, I love their name. Yes. They're essentially like the friendly AI company because they're trying to do AI with, like, the benefit to humanity, or at least doing AI well, is kind of front and center for them. So they're also working on reverse engineering R1, rebuilding it from scratch in a way that's more open, because we didn't mention this. If you run R1 through DeepSeek servers, you're going to be limited. Like, you're going to be limited by what the Chinese state allows you to. So if you search about Tiananmen Square,
What happened in 1989. Yes.
Don't ask, like, those questions. You will get no result. And if you ask about Taiwan, you will get not great results. So that's the other downside. If you're running DeepSeek locally, that will still happen because that's how the model was actually trained, I believe. So what Hugging Face is doing, they're just trying to, like, rip it apart and build a fully open one. I think Perplexity is also working on that. But that's what you can do when you have, quote unquote, open source. When you're more open than the rest, let people work and remix on what you're doing. If they actually release their source code, if they show us their training information, it'll be more useful. But because of this vague openness, Microsoft says that they're going to be putting smaller models, smaller versions of R1 in Windows Copilot Plus AI PCs. That's kind of a cool thing. That's like a thing that just couldn't have happened a couple of weeks ago, because you can't just scale down OpenAI's models as easily. There are models you can run locally, but they're not as good from what I've seen. So
I bet Altman loved that news.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that news, because Microsoft kind of has, like, 50% stake in OpenAI at this point, or close to it, like 49%. So anyway, DeepSeek coming to Windows Copilot Plus AI PCs, maybe it'll make those AI features more useful. And yeah, now, like, this is a thing that people can deploy. Other companies can, like, use in different ways. This is just the beginning. You know, like, this is the beginning of a story, but we're going to see this happen again and again. I feel like OpenAI will at some point come back with something that's even better. It'll be on top. But now we can look at DeepSeek and we can look at other companies and be like, well, you're not, just because you can't get the same hardware, just because you don't have the same funding, doesn't mean you can't outdo OpenAI and these, like, well-funded American companies. So it is a sea change for the AI world, but I don't think, like, this is far from the end of the story. Igor, thank you so much for breaking this down with us. Are you working anything around AI that we should be paying attention to soon?
Yeah, so I'm doing a deep dive into the reorganization that OpenAI is going through. So I've talked to a bunch of legal experts, and it's been just really fascinating. They're nerds in corporate law, and they were all kind of chomping at the bit to talk about really nerdy stuff that involves the Delaware Chancery Court and stuff that I think we are on the periphery, and frequently, Delaware obviously comes up in a lot of our reporting when, for instance, when Elon Musk went to court over Twitter, right? So just kind of learning the ins and outs of that has been really fascinating, and how so much of, I guess, all of these organizations is decided by these laws, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. Let's move on to some news from around Engadget. And actually, we had more time to plan. I didn't know this review was launching today. But Sam Rutherford, our very own Sam, has reviewed Samsung's Galaxy S25 Ultra. And he's given it a high score, but his headline is too much AI, not enough Ultra. So it almost seems he's a little disappointed, but 89 out of 100, still a very good, versatile phone. His summary is, for 2025, Samsung's AI features are a bit more powerful and easier to use. However, aside from a faster chip, a new ultra-wide sensor, and a few cosmetic tweaks, it looks and feels very similar to last year's model, which makes the S25 Ultra a less impressive update than it should be, considering it starts at $1,300. All very good points. Very good phone. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, Igor or Ben.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems to me kind of the, dare I say, the RTX 5090, right? Which is, more so probably the 5080, right?
Because more so the 5080,
The reviews of it have been really mixed, right? And
I've seen some reviews. I have not had a 5080 to test out yet. So we are hopefully getting the 5080 and 5070 soon. I'm more geared for the 5070. But yeah, the 80, apparently, it is not that much faster than the 4080 Super.
Super.
It's the same price. It does have more DLSS4 features, but wasn't the not a huge leap, apparently.
Yeah, and the frame gen, if you're starting from 30 frames per second as opposed to 60 or 90, it looks a lot worse at 3x, right? But
I don't know what you'd be starting at 30, though. That is still an insanely powerful card. I was using the 4080 Super for a while. In 4K, you're still getting past 60 FPS, even with ray tracing and everything flipped on. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in RT Overdrive on Cyberpunk is probably
I was doing Cyberpunk just fine. I was getting,
On the 5090, though.
On the 5090, I was getting near 250 FPS with full frame gen and everything maxed out. Mm-hmm. On the 4080 Super, mm-hmm, I was playing Cyberpunk between 100 and 120 FPS.
Okay.
All maxed out with single frame gen, mm-hmm, one single frame. So I don't know if anything, what's getting 30 FPS for somebody on a card the 4080?
Yeah, I can't, aside from, yeah. So, but to return to the Ultra, and I felt when I was writing our story about Galaxy AI, I was that was I think in a way, I was I got the headline for what the phone is a lot of this AI, it's marginally better, but it feels Samsung is and more broadly, the smartphone industry is a bit out of ideas, right? Because all of the easy hardware gains are just gone, yep, right? Yep. We're so far beyond that golden age from 2007 to what maybe the iPhone X was the golden age of iteration, where
true golden age was beginning launching with the iPhone, but maybe until I would say the iPhone 5, the iPhone 5S, because once we hit the iPhone 6,
it was just bigger.
It's bigger. Yeah. I actually think that design was a step down from the iPhone 5S in so many ways.
I still have a 5S. Yes. And yeah. Generation to generation, year over year, the updates were incredible, right? You had a bit of there was antenna gate in between, there was bend gate, whatever. But the other day you and I were talking about Samsung's first OLED screen on the Galaxy Nexus and how bad it was, the Pentile screen, right? To now the point these OLED screens are I just want OLED everything, right?
I just want OLED everything.
Right?
I mean, yeah, it was bad, but it was still I guess the iPhone looked better at that point, but Samsung was so far ahead of everybody with getting OLED in so many things. Like the Galaxy Tab S, the initial line from like 2012, 2013, those had really good OLED screens. Like I used those things for years because it just looked better than the iPad. But I think that was probably still Pentile, maybe like an updated version or something. But anyway, where are we? Yeah, so the AI features just feel like, yeah, the mobile industry is kind of, not really progressing much. That's how I've been feeling with the PC industry too, like Copilot Plus and everything. I have had many chats with Microsoft over the last year, and every time I sit down and say, when is this going to be useful? Like, you are betting your entire company on Copilot. You made the PC companies change the keyboard button. Some people like having a right control key. You made all these changes around this thing, which you don't even fully control because it's Copilot's based off of OpenAI stuff. And it's not useful. Like, yeah. Recall is still in preview, only on some systems. I don't really like it, to be honest. And I don't care about the queries. I don't care about image generation. I don't know how you feel at this point, Igor.
Well, the real disappointing part is that Windows 11 is like a flaming dumpster fire in terms of like, just like, for instance, you know, like, we've been, you know, talking about the NVIDIA, right? And it's like, I use my computer for work and I use it like, I'm Eastern European, so like PC gaming is literally in my bones, right? Like, and
you dream in Stalker, basically.
Yes, like, and like, you know, Aaron was joking the other day that I have an encyclopedic.
Aaron Sepouris, our executive editor.
Yep. Yeah, knowledge of small factor form cases. So, you know, like the thing about Windows is just so it's like there's like I would love if they did something better with DirectX 12 or just gave like more access to the metal and like, because, you know, like how many games have I had to like, just like live through like shader optimization and then the shaders don't even like pre-cache properly.
Yeah. And that's me every time I launch Dragon Age, like optimizing those shaders. It's going to take some time.
And then you still get shader stutter. Right. And it's just like, what are we even doing, guys? Like, well, can we not focus on the things that people are actually using your PCs for
now? No, but I spent all this money on this AI and I really got to use it. Like, I've spent billions of dollars on this AI stuff. And let me tell you, Microsoft, a lot of these companies feel like the dads, I don't know, 40-something dads, I see a lot of them because I'm one of them. It's like, I got this new grill. I'm going to be grilling. Okay, we invested all this money in this grill. Every night, we're going to have something from the grill because I made this investment that I'm not going to look like a fool, okay? So that's kind of where I'm coming at this point. Check out Sam's review of the Galaxy S25 Ultra. Let us know what you think at podcasts@engadget.com. We've got some news to run through. One thing I want to point out real quick. In other news, when I say the word Incension to you guys, Incension, what do you think?
Is Christopher Nolan finally giving us a sequel to Inception?
No, David Goyer, the former collaborator with Christopher Nolan, seems annoyed that he was not tapped to work on Inception. That's basically what it is. Like, David Goyer is starting this thing. It is a new science fiction franchise, which sounds absolutely stupid. And it's a part of... So Inception is the company. David Goyer, the writer of Blade and... Dark Knight and Batman Begins, co-writer, is also launching the sci-fi series called Emergence. Incension is essentially this thing built on AI and the blockchain to help Hollywood build new franchises and also bring in fan contributions to help power those franchises. And I swear, this is one of the dumbest things I have seen in a press release in a very long time. Like, every sentence of this press release was just very, very stupid. Incension describes itself as, quote, a new blueprint for building modern franchises where IP holders, communities, and agents collaborate seamlessly in an endless playground rooted in real IP, end quote. Because that's the problem Hollywood is facing right now. Nobody knows how to manage their IP properly while also monetizing fan contributions. So dumb. It's all managed by the blockchain, by the way. Like, all these little fan arts or whatever is going to make your IP better. It's going to be blockchain managed. So we will know who made it and we can pay them appropriately because Hollywood also likes to pay people appropriately. Ben, Igor, what do you think? What do you think about this concept?
This sounds like gobbledygook, dude.
It does. in whenever people talk about blockchain, that's what it does. But David Goyer, he doesn't need this. He's getting money from writing for big franchises. He show ran Apple TV's foundation show, right? Like, that's him. He doesn't need that. What is he doing?
Maybe he's trying to fashion himself into, like, Hollywood, like, tech luminary sort of thing. Like, working on, like, high-concept movies and sci-fi TV isn't enough for him. He needs to be the Steve Jobs of Southern California.
It is true that he was sort of the guy who helped kickstart a lot of comic book movies, like, back in the day. Like, the original Blade... We were not really making many comic book movies in the 90s. So Blade 1, X-Men 1, like, these are things that kickstarted, like, where we are with the MCU. He was kind of a pioneer in that respect. He was always a shitty writer. So, you know, take that for what you will. But he is saying that he's played around with ChatGPT and Midjourney, and he thinks, like, he is really interested in how AI could be used as a tool. I sort of am as well. He says that this won't take away jobs, that this will just build creativity. The whole, like, Incension is also working on an AI agent that people can work with to come up with ideas, story ideas and whatnot to help build his franchises. And his franchise Emergence sounds dumb as hell, by the way. Like, it's about, imagine a universe where there's a white hole, not just black holes. There's a white hole where things come out of. Like ships and future technology.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it is literally the mirror image of black hole.
And we don't know who made that white hole. We don't know where that stuff is coming from. It's up to us as the community who is engaged in the IP of Emergence to tell this story. It is such a backwards way of thinking of how fan contributions work, right? Like, fandom, I'm big into fandom. I've read so much fan fiction. I love going to Comic-Con. Fans participate in things that they love, built by creators who put their heart and soul in building characters and stories that they actually care about. It's not this, like, big AI blockchain mush of garbage IP, which is how I'm kind of reading this. Am I being too harsh? I don't know.
For those who are listening to the podcast, you didn't see me like just put my hand into my head, because I'm just, this is, you know, like, why are we reinventing?
Why are we doing this?
What are we doing? You know, like, you don't need the blockchain to find, you know, to ensure who bought, like, who created this content gets paid. It's called just a database.
You do need the blockchain if you are a blockchain company named Story. Story blockchain is also powering Incension and all this. This is giving me real Quibi vibes, but I had to put this in my post. Like, the thing about Quibi, that was also another, like, tech first thing for a thing we didn't really need. But they raised nearly $2 billion in funding. Like, they raised money from real companies. This company has raised some money from the A16Z crypto fund. And Quibi was also backed by, like, Jeffrey Katzenberg, like, Hollywood elite. And it failed in, like, weeks. It failed immediately because our initial
part of that was
so
a pandemic, maybe.
No. Did you actually watch the Quibi shows, Ben?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So
who did? Whoever did?
I did. And I reviewed it. And it was shit. It was garbage. I will say, at least Incension allowed me to write this very first sentence, and I think it's one that I'll think about for a while. I wrote, "You'll only need to remember the name Incension for the brief moment you're reading this post, because you'll likely never have to think about it again." That also goes for this podcast segment. So, Incension.
So, speaking of other nonsense, can you tell us a bit more about Helion?
Helion. Oh, yeah, talking about things that probably will never exist, sort of like AGI. Sort of like that. Let's talk about fusion power. A private startup called Helion aims to have a working fusion reactor by 2028. Investors include Sam Altman, Peter Thiel. I believe Microsoft has also invested in them quite a bit too.
And this is really, really linked to the idea that, like, prior to Monday, the AI logic was, we need more data centers, we need to cover the earth in computing power, and what's going to power those data centers? You know, we had, like, Google switching a nuclear energy plant back on specifically to power their AI ambitions. And now they're like, okay, well, we need even more power, and we would like it to be cleaner, so Helion, like, here's a startup that could, like, produce some power for us. But I think, as Steve Dent said in the subhead to this article on Engadget, Altman and Peter Thiel think the company can do it, but historically, the odds aren't great. Then there's this bit from an interview with Altman in Bloomberg, where Altman is just doubling and tripling down on the idea of Helion. The interviewer says, in the short term, is there any way to sustain AI's growth without going backward on climate goals? Altman says, yes, but none are as good, in my opinion, as quickly permitting fusion reactors. Our particular kind of fusion is just a beautiful approach that we should race toward. That should just be done. It sounds like he's just trying to will this to into existence.
That's how these guys work. And that's how a lot of this stuff has happened, basically. Like, he has the force of will. Of, like,
you can't will physics into existence. You can will concepts into existence. Too.
Like, his reality perception field to just, like, you're going to do it, right? You're going to do it. This company,
reality,
by the way,
distortion field.
This company has been around since 2013. Most recently, it raised $425 million in funding. So that's more than $1 billion raised for this thing. It's now valued at $5.4 billion. We don't know how well this will work. I do think, like, maybe somebody, this is more probably achievable than, like, whatever the mystery god of AGI is. In China, there's also something called the artificial sun that people are working on. And I think it just had, like, a really massive burn that people are talking about. Like, that could be a significant thing. The only information about that comes from Chinese state media. So I don't know. We don't know what we can trust about that. But yeah, if whoever figures this out, like, you pour billions into this, if you figure it out, you're, like, set. You are set to create money, essentially, like, limitless energy and also pollution-free energy. So we shall see.
So I'm also working on a feature about, like, the nuclear power angle of this. And,
nice,
you know,
what's
really frustrating about this is that the climate crisis is perfectly solvable with the current technologies we have right now, right? Like, between nuclear and wind and solar, we have all the tools we need. And what I think these kind of solutions get lost in is that it's, like, it's really easy to think of this as, like, a silver bullet, right? Instead of thinking about the hard problems of, like, permitting and getting, like, local government support and, like, getting the public on board with these and making it easier for us to deploy these existing technologies, right? And, you know, so I think this is so frustrating because, you know, like, the climate crisis requires hundreds of different small solutions for us to, like, make, to have any chance of addressing it. And yet we're spending all of this money on this moonshot, what is effectively a moonshot, just like carbon capture, right? Like,
sure.
And it's just so frustrating. And, you know, I just wish they would put some of this money and force of will into actual meaningful change that will help people.
They have certainly poured a lot of money into nuclear too, like nuclear technology. Bill Gates has been talking about his, like, the small reactors and stuff.
The little peewee nuclear reactors.
The small, yeah, modular
I was, like, a big proponent of that stuff for a while because it took a while. That was before solar, like, really blew up and before solar panels, like, got so efficient as they are now. Now I'm even wondering, like, is it even worth it? It is 2025. It takes so long to do anything with nuclear. Like, it takes a long time to build and approve a nuclear plant. Here in Georgia, we just opened up, I believe, a new reactor of one of our existing plants. And it took forever. And it added a ton of money to all of our power bills. And we don't, like, a lot of the money that the state invested to make that thing possible has just, like, seemingly evaporated into, like, the political appointees who pushed it or something too. So,
but wouldn't that also be true of fusion?
It would potentially be, but you know what? At least fusion wouldn't leave us, like, tons of radioactive waste that will be a problem for centuries. You know, like, that there are.
In fact, it would make helium that is really difficult to get anywhere else on Earth.
Yeah, so I do think, like, the sort of, like, calculus for me has changed personally. I do think, like, as a society, we made a real mistake giving up on nuclear as we did in the 80s and the 90s, and, like, that investment should have been back then getting us to a point where we could, like, get into real true renewables. But even now, I'm like, I don't know. I kind of see the point in going after fusion, but people are chasing nuclear. And I think nuclear itself, like, it'll probably be easier to, we don't know. We don't know what it would be. But if somebody does fusion, right, the cost of, like, setting up is not, like, what do we do with all this waste? It's more like, what do we do with all this bountiful, precious, precious resource that we actually don't have enough of in this on this planet? So anyway, complicated subject. I want to get you back for this, Igor, because we should talk more nuclear. We should talk about new energy stuff. How about something really dumb to round out news? Google has classified the U.S. as a sensitive country alongside China, Russia, and Trump. Or after Trump's Gulf of America comments, Google Maps is also renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America in the U.S. because that's the world.
The reasoning behind that is that Google's like, we just go by what the U.S. government data says, as if this isn't a way of currying favor with a highly petty administration when Google still needs a whole lot of like government cooperation for any number of things that it wants to do.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Now we can't trust maps because Trump. We can't trust maps anymore. So whatever, guys. Let's just move on to other stuff. I'm working on watching a lot of stuff from the Sundance Film Festival. I'll bring up some of those in my pop culture picks. Igor, anything? You said you were working on this nuclear power thing. Anything else you want to shout out?
Yeah, I recently, this kind of dovetails into the pop culture picks, but I recently published a preview of a game called Citizen Sleeper 2. And if
nice.
You know, so if you want to read or play really good sci-fi, I think this is literally the best.
That first game was incredible.
Incredible, yeah. Right. So if you haven't played the first game, it's incredible. The new one comes out tomorrow. And the creator, Gareth, he is just like such a wonderful, kind, gentle soul and has so many ideas about like, it's really a game that touches on like how we live in this moment, right? Where seemingly everything is like difficult and going wrong. And it really, you know, it kind of points to community and stuff, but it was just like, if you loved the first game, Dev, you will love the second game. It is really just like, the writing is just impeccable. Like it is just such great vibes. And yeah, so you can check out my preview there. And yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, yeah, let's get into our pop culture picks. Anything else you want to mention, Igor, beyond Citizen Sleeper 2?
The final episode of Silo was Chef's Kiss.
I need to catch up. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to catch up. So that's it for me.
Okay. I'll shout out a couple things from Sundance, which I hate to do this, unfortunately, because it's like these movies will not be available to watch for a while. Sometimes it takes a year for these things to find distribution. Sometimes they never get, distribution at all. But I saw this movie called Obex, directed by Albert Burney, who did this movie a couple years ago called Strawberry Mansions. Obex is very cool. It's a black and white sort of retro tech thing. It's about a guy, a very loner guy who does not leave his house. He lives in a world, it's basically set in like 1989, I think, or late 80s. But he has a Mac computer. He is surrounded by VHS tapes. In his living room, he has three CRTs stacked on each other where he watches VHS movies and he watches TV and everything. Like, he is a guy surrounded by old analog technology, which I just kind of love to see. For a living, apparently, he makes ASCII art portraits. So, like, people will send him photos and he will just, like, tap, tap, tap at the keys to like map out an ASCII art image, and then he will print it out on a dot matrix printer and send it back to people. Just kind of a wild setup. But he finds this game. He sort of finds himself. The game sort of takes over his life. His dog is, I don't know if it's kidnapped or his dog basically goes missing in the game, and he has to go back in and get it. It's very lo-fi. It's reminiscent of Pi, reminiscent of Eraserhead. I feel like narratively it could do more to like bring us into his world or his line of thinking, so it's a really cool aesthetic exercise. I don't know if it's fully successful as like a character piece, but it's cool. It was a really cool watch. It's called Obex. I could see this being on Netflix or something and being a midnight find for a lot of people. I also saw this movie called Luz, which is a production across China and France. Co-stars Isabelle Huppert, which is wild. Also, like, French cinema icon Isabelle Huppert is in this, and it's about two people who use this VR world to find a sense of community and identity, and in their own lives they're like kind of disconnected from the world. It's about a girl who's trying to reconnect with her stepmother, Isabelle Huppert, who is dealing with some sort of illness, and about a guy who is sort of, I don't know, a bouncer or somebody who's working for a nightclub who is trying to reconnect with his lost daughter. And the only way he can do that is via live streams and potentially this VR world. It's really well shot. I think the way they produce the VR imagery, this movie is directed by Flora Lau. It looks incredible. I feel like this is going to be a big like art house contender at some point. I just wish, again, it had like more time for emotion, more time to tell us about these characters. But this movie, I'm hoping to write up a review about Luz because I think it's very interesting, at least. Ben, anything you want to shout out from your end?
I've been watching some weird anime.
Sure, tell me. Give me one.
Have you heard of a show called Sarazanmai?
No.
It's about three middle schoolers who get turned into kappas. And I didn't know that there was an aspect of kappa lore where you, like, kappas steal a, like, fictional organ from the Concho area. Let's just say that.
Sure, sure. Kappas are like the river monsters, right? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I knew the part where you needed to, like, make them bow to, like, get the water to fall out of the cup on their head. I didn't know about the rectal bit of it.
nobody predicts it. It's sort of like the raccoons in the
tanukis. Yeah, yeah. Tanukis. People don't know about tanuki lore because if all you know is Tanuki Mario, they're just like, oh, isn't that cute? He's tanuki got a little places, tail.
You know.
But you have to read up on the full lore to see how spicy it can get. So this is really, really, really well animated and just so bizarre. It's the most anime I've watched in a long time.
More than Dandadan? Really?
That's saying something.
I haven't seen Dandadan.
You gotta see Dandadan, yeah.
When's the new Watanabe coming out? That's this year, right?
That's soon, yeah. They were previewing that. And apparently, the news from him, Shinichiro Watanabe, creator of Cowboy Bebop, all his stuff exists in the same universe. And that's kind of how I've always thought of it, but I'm excited by that. Anything else, Ben, about this crazy series? You should watch Dandadan if you want some anime-ass anime.
Okay.
You got to watch Dandadan.
We've been talking about Dandadan like...
Yes. Like I'm talking about Dandadan, and you went ahead and watched a series about Kappa? Really? Come on, Ben.
Okay, that's it for our show. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien, and the podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Igor online at...
Blue Sky, so it's just Igor, I-G-O-R, Bonifacic, B-O-N-I-F-A-C-I-C, at Blue Sky. I quit Twitter, so that's the only place you can find me.
All right. And you can find Devendra online at...
You can find me, yeah. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm at Devendra on Blue Sky, Mastodon, all over. I spend most of my time at Blue Sky these days. I'm on TikTok if you can find me there. We produce like some videos that we push to the Engadget channel. I also talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
And if you want to send me some suggestions of anime I should watch that is very strange, but hopefully not gory, you can find me at heybellman.bluesky.social. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, because I promise you, as the producer, that helps. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify. You know, there's one mouth and then another mouth attached to, like, the back end of
the first
person. But
it's
like,
too early for that. It's 11:27 a.m.
But I need to know.